Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to BBA Live with your hosts, Anthony C. Wayne and Ricky Keeler.
Hello, welcome to BBA Live. I'm your host, Anthony C. Wayne, coming to you here live on Blog Talk Radio. We got an interesting podcast for you tonight. Thanks for joining. Before I move forward, I want to let you know that you can call in 347-326-9300. That's 347-326-9300. A little later on in the podcast, we'll have Richard Dyer. He was on about a month ago. He's the creator of the Giants Cove blog for the San Francisco Giants. I remember when he was on last time, I considered him cautiously optimistic about his team. But when you look at the standings now, I'm sure he's a little more comfortable than he was about a month ago, even though Hunter Pence tore his hamstring the day after we had him on the podcast. So hopefully this is not a bad situation for him again, where him being on this podcast causes some sort of grief. Maybe what's his name? Baumgartner goes out like Kershaw with a bad back or something. Now I have Ricky Keeler in the queue. Going to bring him in a second. You know, Rick is the host of Yanks Go Yard here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also check out District on Deck, where he covers the Nets as well as the Yankees on Yanks Go Yard, the blog on Fan Side of the blog. Now I'm going to bring in Rick, and we'll see what he's up to. Rick, what's up, man?
Hey, C, how are you? Last show for the month of June.
You know, I don't think we realize it, but this season is taking on a life of its own, right, as we progress into July.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of fun now. This is when baseball gets a little fun. You know, you get close to the All-Star break, teams start to kind of look and see where they're at. But before we get into that, I want to get your take on this thing with the rain delay last night on the game. Did you stay up and watch that game?
I made it till about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then I gave up.
This story to me is just, I don't know if it's comical or pathetic or why didn't, I don't understand why they didn't just play this inning the next day. Why did they have to play it and end at 2:45 at night last night?
Well, let me ask you this first question, AC. Pathetic for who? The umpires or for? I think the umpires got it.
I'm just saying, like, think about how you're sitting in the stands at that point. I mean, I felt bad for those guys or gals.
No, I did too. I thought the rule is stupid. I get that. I understand. The umpires, though, did it right. There was no. Joe Girardi tried to be cute. Joe Girardi tried to win a game by getting his closer out because he was realizing he wasn't pitching good and was trying to win that way. And Jeff Anderson said, No. We got a tying run on base. We got the go ahead run, a 3-1 count. That's not happening. We'll wait all night to play. So that's the right idea. And for Joe Girardi after the game to blame the umpires was Bush League on his part. And quite frankly, you clearly see when the Yankees aren't winning, he frankly complains about a lot of things. And remember, I am pro Joe Girardi, but if you're not stopping the game in the 7th or the 8th, which honestly that's what they should have did last night, you can't now complain when Chapman can't handle the 9th and can't get 3 outs. So I thought by the Yankees it was terrible. The umpire should have stopped it earlier, but again, I can't blame them because they're doing what's right by the Rangers. And even as a Yankees fan, I would feel bad if that game got called last night and Texas got screwed.
No, I totally get it. I agree with you that they probably should have called it before that inning because it had been raining throughout the night. But for me, I don't understand, like I said prior to the conversation, why didn't they just play the game today? Why couldn't they just set it up the way it was right before the rain delay and then play that inning or half an inning before the start of this game? The fact that they had played it at, what was it, 2:12, they finally got on the field. I mean, it's just comical to me because of the fact that did Michael Kay and those guys, were they still waiting that out in the booth? Did they have to call that I mean, I can't imagine the WFAN when they had to, like, get, well, they, I guess they went back to the game at, like, 2:12 in the morning or something, right, with John Sterling?
Yeah, they, I'm sure they stayed around. And from what I understand, the rule with the weather is it just goes back to the last completed inning in that case, which is wrong, too, especially they're talking about it a little bit on other outlets today. And was about, I can understand where the rule, like, look, Texas is here for the next 3 days. It's not like this is the last game of the series where you're worried about trying to get things in. I don't understand why they couldn't pick it up at five, like right before today's game. Then you can bring back Aroldis Chapman. So if anything, it helps the Yankees. If they wanted to bring Chapman back, they could, and he would have better ground to pitch on. It's a rule that has to be changed because you have to care about the weather. You have to kind of understand the logistics of the situation. But again, if the Yankees, if you already wanted to play it that way, what I would have done is brought in Yates, had him face a batter, say it's bad out, and if you're going to do it that way, then you can bring Chapman back out of the rain delay while the Texas system's sitting there for 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly. You got this flamethrower throwing to guys that have been, you know, cranky, basically cranking up there in the bullpen. This is just you could talk about this. This is a great topic, I think, for some reason. It's animated, and so when I first saw it, it kind of shocked me. I've never seen a game end that late with people in the stands, too, and very sparsely, you know, attended. It was just – and they said that you can hear Beltran's little son, Adrian Beltre's son in the stands because there was nobody really there to drown him out. Did you read that?
I didn't read that, but you could clearly tell the Rangers really wanted that game last night, especially after the way they viewed it, viewed what was going on. They understood what the Yankees were trying to do. And you could tell when they got the hit to take the lead, that dugout had a lot of energy. It was back. And look, the Rangers don't need the game. The Rangers are 20-plus games over 500. They have a 10-game lead in the West. But they wanted that game last night after what happened, so give them the credit while the Yankees season continues to sink and Carlos Beltran even hurt tonight. But from what I'm seeing on Twitter, it seems to be day-to-day, which is good news because Beltran's one of their best trade chips at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's some hot teams in the American League. As you touched on the Rangers with the first team to 50 wins. The Cleveland Indians, it's funny. Do you remember our last podcast? I don't know if I brought it up or it was a topic of what you want to see is going to happen the next week in Cleveland, whether they're going to really take hold of this division or they're just kind of flounder like Kansas City and Detroit and the White Sox. Well, they've taken hold of this division in a dominant fashion. I think now they won 11 in a row. Did they win tonight? Because they were up 5-2 on the Braves, right?
Yep, they beat Atlanta 5-3.
5-3. That's 11 in a row, and what I looked up here is their starting pitching really has been their bread and butter. I don't know if you seen the whole starting pitching. All five of these guys have been really hot the last like maybe month or so.
They got a good game out of Corey Kluber tonight. He had a no hitter into the sixth inning, 8 innings, 2 runs, 3 hits, struck out 7 and walked 1. Now again, this is the Braves lineup that doesn't have much fear in it outside of Freeman, but Kluber was great. The Indians got good production from Jose Ramirez to 2 RBIs. Carlos Santana drove in a run. Lindor's been playing great this year. This is an Indians team that's taking advantage absolutely of the division that it's in. The Royals have been inconsistent. The White Sox have been inconsistent. Detroit's been inconsistent. So if you can build up a lead right now at 5.5, depending on what Kansas City does against the Cardinals, you got yourself some breathing room, and Cleveland definitely, I think, needs to make moves with this offense because, remember, they're still doing this without Michael Brantley, which is a huge surprise, but they got a good production from Tyler Naquin. Lonnie Chisenhall had a huge game last night, 2 more hits today. So they're just finding different ways to win, and with a manager like Francona, finding different ways to mix in, they're getting the job done. And I think from what I saw, I see the Indians haven't lost since the Cavs won the championship.
Nice. You got to love when sports becomes like supernatural, right? It has like cosmic things going on.
I just saw another stat. I saw another something just came up in my Twitter feed. Somebody I saw tweet this. The Indians have 53 of their last 88 against teams under 500.
Yeah, well, hey, that's what they say. You beat up on the second division teams, and then you play 500 against the good teams. You should be able to keep yourself relevant. So, I mean, Cleveland. yeah, definitely. But you know what? You see other teams, they struggle against some of these bad teams. I'm not going to mention any names. I don't want to, because we spent so much time on them last week. But the other team in New York. There is some news, actually, with them. Maybe should we get it out of the way right away?
Well, they're kind of lucky tonight that they're going to get Giolito out of the game with this rain delay.
Yeah, it was a typical New York Mets Matt Harvey start where they don't give him any run support.
He looked great,
early,
and Giolito, from what I've seen him like on MILB.TV last year, I watched him like once or twice. His breaking ball is great. Good movement on the fastball. You can tell why the Nats, why he's a top prospect in the game. He has fastball command issues. Really, he looked pretty good tonight. Got some good defense in the infield, which is a big plus. And you look at the situation right now with Steven Strasburg. He did throw a bullpen session today. You would think he's not too far away, judging by his already throwing bullpen session. The key for me would be if Gio Gonzalez sucks again on Thursday against Cincinnati, which is a good bet because Gio is, what, 0-7 over his last 8 starts or something like that. I would think if Gio doesn't get it right by the All-Star break, I would recommend DFAing Gio Gonzalez and giving Giolito the spot.
No, I agree because why not? You know, I mean, it's all about performance. I was looking at Gio Gonzalez in the dugout and he kind of looks a little aloof and lost a little bit. I don't know if he has that confidence. He definitely lost his confidence as he barrels down with his losing streak. So why not? I mean, Taillon stuck in Pittsburgh and Urias, who's kind of walking a lot of people tonight. I don't know if they won that game. Still looking for his first win on the Dodgers. He's kind of solidified himself somewhat. So, hey, listen, I have him on my fantasy team, Giolito, so I wouldn't mind that at all. Yeah, I don't care about Gio Gonzalez.
he needs what you saw last night in Boston, which we'll get into later, I'm sure, with Dustin Pedroia yelling at Eduardo Rodriguez during last night's debacle where the Rays snapped their 11-game losing streak. He needs that.
Yeah.
Because somebody's going to get in his face. I don't know if they're doing it in private. Somebody's going to get in his face and yell at this guy. Because if there's nothing injury wrong, then there's something up there in the head, like you mentioned. So that's the big issue. You can't keep throwing automatic loss out there. And then that's what Gio Gonzalez has become. And to your Dodgers point, Dodgers lead 6-2 in the sixth. Urias has given up 2 runs and 2 hits, 6 walks, but does have 5 strikeouts. So he's still on the mound in the sixth, which he usually doesn't go this far in a game, which we still letting him throw a little bit today. So he is in line to get a win, which would be nice.
Yeah, right. Now, I don't know how long he's going to be there. But then again, Clayton Kershaw, we heard, flew back to Los Angeles to get his back examined. And to tell
that's
me that is
that
I don't know. I think that's a DL stint, right?
I don't know about DL stint, but every time you're hearing flying back to get your back checked, that's a scary spot, especially since this team depends on him to win games, period.
That's a major blow to that team if he's – well, it's still early. If they can kind of nip it in the bud like they did with Strasburg, it sounds like Strasburg is going to be back within the allotted time that he's out, then maybe that won't be so bad. But then again, if he's out for a significant amount of time, you're right. I mean, he's basically their meal ticket. I think I saw a stat where they've won the majority of their games when he's pitching and sub-500 when he's not pitching.
I think they only lost 2 games that he's pitched this year, because I know they lost Sunday against Pittsburgh, which was a surprise. I guess if Clayton Kershaw loses, something's up, and I guess it was the back.
Yeah, I mean, plus considering he's doing so well, this is like one of his best seasons. He has like a 0.3 walk per 9 inning rate or something.
Yeah,
some crazy.
Scary. Good, but we've seen him struggle. We've seen Arrieta struggle, too. I mean, he looked a little bit rough last night, but of course, when you have a guy like Chris Bryant that can homer 3 times and get a couple doubles, you're doing okay there.
Do you know that was the first time someone's ever done that? Isn't that weird? I would think
that's why
I love 3 homers
sport.
And 2 doubles.
You never know what you're going to get on it.
Definitely. I mean, I don't know. When I saw that, I was like, wow, I didn't realize that nobody's ever done that before. I mean, I know he went 5 for 5 with, you know, with 6 RBI, and he had the 2 doubles and the 3 homers. You know, the funny thing about that was, and we'll bring in Richard in a second. I see him. He's waiting there from the Giants Cove. Is that they wanted him to do a curtain call in Cincinnati. I mean, how embarrassing would have that been for Cincinnati?
But you have to think about it like this. I'm sure that most of those fans there are for Cubs fans.
Well, why is that? All of a sudden the team is so good, they have better travel fans? Because, like, I don't think there was that many Cubs fans when they played Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, but remember, you got to remember, the Reds have been terrible. So,
yeah.
Not a lot of Reds fans are probably showing up right now. I mean, I'm sure the Reds fan base out there is great, but I'm sure not a lot of them are going out on a Monday night to watch Cubs-Reds. So you might get the Cubs fans from Chicago to Cincinnati that might take a 3-game series in there.
No, I mean, that's a good point. These kind of really bad teams start to see, like Tampa. Remember Tampa used to be called like New York South or something? Like it would be packed with Yankee fans back in the late 90s.
Boston, too. It's both Boston and New York can travel down there pretty easily.
Yeah. All right, let's bring in our guest, Richard Dyer. He's a repeat guest. He was on about a month ago. I mentioned that. And his Giants, I think, were coming off of some insane winning streak or crazy amount of games won or something. I don't know, I forget. But now they're in the midst of another winning streak and sit atop the National League West in comfortable fashion. Now, hopefully, Richard, we're going to bring you in a little more optimistic than you were 30 days ago. How you doing, Rich?
I'm doing great. Great to be here, AC and Ricky. Great to be with you again.
All right. Yeah, it's always fun to have you on. Thanks for calling in. Now, I alluded to the fact that you were a little bit, I said cautiously optimistic, but do you feel more confident now with your Giants?
Absolutely not. it's not that I'm cautious or afraid. I think the Giants are doing really well. They're, you know, 49 and 29. They lead the NL West. They're doing really well. 7-3 in their last 10. You know, just doing very well. They are still the team that they are, though. This is a team that reminds me a little bit of a couple of other teams in the majors who are doing well. And the other team they remind me of is the Miami Marlins, in that they are frontline very good and performing very well, but depth-wise, it falls off dramatically. And you'd have to say that I think we all, the three of us, think that, you know, baseball is about longevity and there's, you know, 100 games to go and so on. And that really counts for something. So with the Giants have been doing well. They had a very good schedule the last month and a half against a lot of 500 and sub-500 teams. But I hate to use this cliche, but I'm going to trot it out here and put it up and say there's a lot of baseball left to be played. And I still think the Dodgers are the team to beat in the NL West.
Wow, that's a bold statement there, because I'm looking at the standings right now. The Dodgers are 7 games back, and the fact that we alluded to the Clayton Kershaw situation, their possible situation with his back. I know what you're saying. I mean, you watching this team day in and day out, and you watching, you see Jeff Samardzija kind of lay an egg more than once, and you know. But then again, you're so far ahead of the pack in terms of wins over 500 that you have to feel, I guess you just don't want to be, you know, caught off guard, right, I guess, with this team.
Oh, not at all. I don't mind being caught off guard at all with the Giants. In fact, if the Giants ended up finishing second in the West, it wouldn't faze me at all. I mean, that I picked the Dodgers to win the West. However, having said that, the Giants have played very well. Think about this, and basically, you guys know baseball doesn't work like this, but if the Giants played 500 for the rest of the year, starting tonight, they would end up with 91 wins. I think a lot of people felt that 92, 93 wins was enough to take the National League West. So you're saying that if the Giants only play 500 ball, which is unlikely, that's the least that they'll do. Now, the reality of what really happens, you know, the last 4 months of baseball is that there are streaks, there are injuries, there are losing jags that you can't explain, and winning jags that you can't explain. So while that sounds very tidy and everything, baseball rarely plays out that way. The Dodgers are by far the smartest and best organization, probably in baseball, but certainly in the National League, right up there with the Cubs. The Giants are very old school, but you have to give them credit for where they are now. The major thing I give them credit for is they did something this year that they don't usually do. They haven't done it in about 13 or 14 years. They addressed their needs in the off season rather than in July. And in the off season, they went out and got Johnny Cueto, and to team him up with Madison Bumgarner is an irresistible kind of force that you unleash in your division. And it also works in the postseason. That's the beautiful thing about having two number one starters is obviously it works all season long. It works in your division battle, but it works really well in the playoffs, in the postseason. So the Giants did a really, really good move by not doing what they usually do, which is to wait until, you know, July 15th to try to figure out how to improve their team. And you have to give them really a lot of credit for that. Now, they're one of the richest, most profitable professional teams in North America. So it's not about money. It's about spending money. And this year they did that, and I think it's working for them. I think it'll work pretty well the rest of the season for them.
Rick, did you want to chime in there? Hello.
Yeah, Richard, I'm glad you're back. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask you for since the week, and we've been looking, obviously, with Friday being a month till the trade deadline. I've been seeing a lot lately in a lot of the New York, I think I saw the New York Post, the Giants are interested in bringing back Carlos Beltran to the fold, of course, trading for Zach Wheeler a few years back. Now, there's a lot of ground to cover at AT&T Park and right field, and obviously I worry about the gaps or anything like that, so we talked about, I know, Miller and the relievers on the last time you were here. What do you think the realistic move for the Giants, if it is realistic, to bring back Beltran, and would it fit having Beltran and Span share that gap in right center with the age out there?
That's a really good question, and it kind of take three steps back. You're talking about the broader question of what are the Giants' needs, and one of the Giants' obvious needs, before Hunter Pence got injured, the right fielder, the Giants had a need in left field. They had an outfielder need. Now with Pence down and Pence with a history of injuries, it's an obvious need for the Giants to get a run-producing outfielder. And the question is, where will they go? You know, will they overpay for Jay Bruce? Will they overpay for Ryan Braun? Carlos Beltran, Beltran's days with the Yankees, and he may have been injured tonight. I don't know what his status is, but in general, he's a fifth wheel right now with the Yankees. The Yankees certainly don't need him. It's hard for me to imagine the Giants, and if Beltran came back, he would end up playing left field. I'm not sure he would do that. I'm not sure the Giants want to take another flyer on him. I think the Giants are going to go in a different direction. They have two really big needs, the outfield knee that I mentioned and bullpen. They have to shore up their bullpen. They have to find out what they can do to up their bullpen. They're 12th overall in the major leagues in bullpen ERA. And that's not a winning place to be with a bullpen. It's going to be interesting to see if they give up some of the pieces, the few good pieces they have in their farm league. Their farm league is Baseball America has rated them the last couple of years any out of 30 teams anywhere from, you know, 22, 23, 24, 26 out of 30 teams. They have a really poor farm system. And the funny thing about teams that have a poor minor league system, it's the two or three players they have, they hate to give up more than a team like Boston or Chicago Cubs are happy to give up players in their minor leagues, quality players, because they have so many. With the Giants, it's the opposite problem. So they're doing a little bit of a kind of walking on a high wire here for July as to what they're going to do and how they think they can do this. I think the Dodgers are going to really press them, and that means the Giants can't just sit back and say, yeah, we're good, we're going to continue to do what we're doing. We need to do a proactive move. The Giants need to make a proactive move. Where will they go? If they get Carlos Beltran, I will personally take you guys out to Pro Se in New York for dinner. That's not going to happen. But having said that, the Giants have to make a move. And it's really funny to say that about a team that's 49-29, right, that is seven games ahead of the team behind them. But they have offensive problems that are exponential. They have a leadoff hitter in that is not getting on base. They have a guy who is hitting in third in their lineup, who is supposed to be a kind of a change maker in Matt Duffy, who is really tanked. And they have both offensive issues and bullpen issues that have to be dealt with. So, you know, we'll see where the Giants go. They have the money to take on anything they want. They have the ability to trade one or two good pieces from their farm system, which they're going to be very reluctant to do. So how do they balance that off, and what do they do? It's going to be really interesting to see.
One of the names I just saw out there, I think ESPN's Jerry Krasnick had this. You mentioned Duffy being injured and not having as good a year compared to last year. What about Yunel Escobar?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good that's a really good one. That's one that makes a lot of sense. You have to understand that last year Matt Duffy went from a utility infielder to taking over at third base, and you know, so the sample size on him is pretty small, and if he's not what he was last year, the Giants are in even deeper trouble because now they have an infield offensive problem and an outfield offensive problem. And that's the kind of thing that catches up with you sooner than later. So the whole thing with the starting pitching, obviously Bumgarner, obviously Johnny Cueto, Samardzija, I never had any expectation that he would be anything other than kind of a number three, number four starter, and he's reverting back to that slowly. The Giants could also use another starter, and the kind of starter that the Dodgers have, you know, the guys who are coming back for them, like McCarthy and Anderson, who have been around a while, all the Giants need at starter is a league average guy who can come in there, eat some innings, keep the RA under four, and you know, kind of move it forward. So I see the Giants as having a kind of a multiplicity of needs, and what they pick out to solve is going to be, I think, one of the more interesting things in the National League over the next month.
Now,
how do you guys feel about the Dodgers?
Actually, I was gonna touch on that a little bit because you're sounding like you maybe think the Dodgers. I mean, right now, let's say in 2 weeks the Dodgers are 12 games out of first place.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're gonna start talking about the Rockies then. You know, see maybe they can make a move because right now, I mean, the Rockies are probably a little more exciting than the Dodgers. But just to agree with you on certain aspects that you touched on, I think that's a good point that you made regarding the starting pitching having a 1-2 punch, you know, Baumgartner and Cueto. These guys are really you know, they're battle tested. They've been in the postseason. Cueto with the Royals last year, and Baumgartner, obviously we know his resume, and I agree with you with that. I think you can get by with that in the postseason. And also, just to touch on the offense, Brandon Bell, to me, has been kind of surprising, the fact that he's putting up such consistent numbers so far this season.
Well, yeah, and I did a recent blog where I mentioned that it's become kind of tedious over the last 3 or 4 years. Every year, the Giant fans are asked, you know, who do you want to see, like, do well this year? Who's going to step up? And every year they say Brandon Belt. Well, actually, Brandon Belt has stepped up 3 or 4 years ago. He's been excellent for the last several years. He was injured in 2014, but last year and in 2012, he was one of the top first basemen in the National League in terms of offensive production and defense. He's got a 928 OPS right now, and he's a dominant run producer in the National League. I think a lot of people haven't quite caught up with how good Brandon Belt is, and this may be the year that he kind of makes a little splash and gets people's attention, but he's been there for a while. Right now, in a lot of ways, he's the rock of the Giants' offense. Posey is doing okay. He's below, at 800 OPS. He won't be there for long. He'll move up. But the Giants are looking for that kind of high-level run producer. And right now it's Posey and Belt, and it's going to be that way pretty much for between now and the end of the season. And could be enough. Could be enough with midline bullpen and high-end starters. And you're right. It depends on where the Dodgers go from now until September, and we'll see what they do. They're a very smart organization, and they have a lot of assets in their minor leagues, many more than the Giants do. They have to make decisions about whether they trade that now, those assets in now, to move forward now, or if they don't.
Now, I guess we can go through the division quickly. I also want to get your take on some of the things that are going on in the major leagues. I touched on Colorado. Arizona's been playing better. I saw Zach Greinke. I think he's pitching tonight. He's been doing much better. Everybody was on top of him. But then I did see Tony La Russa was upset with the fact that his team isn't doing that well as he expected. I'm impressed by the Rockies. They do have to get some pitching. But this division right now, I don't see it as being as strong as the National League East or the Central. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely right. I mean, the Rockies have that eternal arm wrestling match they have with their ballpark and their starting pitching. The magic, solution to that seemed to be to have a really strong bullpen, a decent starting rotation, but a bullpen that could come in the sixth inning, sometimes in the fifth inning, and carry the ball. They did that. Those are the moves that they made in the off season. But Colorado's reverting to what they always do, which is having a dominating National League offense and a starting pitching that just gives up too many runs. The Diamondbacks are Diamondbacks to me are if you had been the GM of the Diamondbacks 3 or 4 years ago, I think you would have looked at your future as being as good as any team in baseball, and I'm wondering why they aren't as good as they are. The management has been it changed in the last couple of years. And previous to that, it reminds me of the Dodgers ownership 4 years ago, who were terrible and spent money like they were printing it off a printing press, and made, at the same time they were spending a lot of money, they were making bad baseball decisions, which is a terrible combination. But the Diamondbacks are kind of second to that. I always think of Trevor Bauer, who's a starter now with Cleveland. He's 25 years old. He was drafted by Arizona in the first round of the 2011 amateur draft. He was the third pick overall. Incredible arm. And this was at a time when the Diamondbacks had Kirk Gibson as a manager, and they had this kind of macho kind of thing where, you know, if you couldn't, you know, run around the bases with a broken arm, then, you know, that's what we valued. And this guy, Trevor Bauer, came in with a whole set of warm-ups and preparations to pitch that really annoyed Kurt Gibson, the manager, to the extent that it kind of created an infection in the whole relationship. Trevor Bauer liked to warm up with long tosses from deep right field to home plate. He wore his cap slightly sideways, which old school Kurt Gibson didn't like. He was into yoga. So what did they do? They traded him to Cleveland in 2012 as part of a three-team trade with Cincinnati. And Bauer, the reason Bauer was drafted in the first round and was the number three pick overall in 2011 is that he was really good. And I think it took him a couple of years to kind of, you know, reset himself. And here he is with Cleveland with a 1.17 whip, 84 strikeouts, 90, you know, 0.1 innings or whatever. He is going to be a dominant pitcher in the American League. But Arizona couldn't keep him because he wore his cap crooked and liked to warm up with long throws from right field. I mean, Arizona is kind of cleaning up its act, but it still has a lot of this old school kind of thing on their approach to building a team. And they've had an incredible volume of talented players, especially starting pitchers. And I am baffled by why Arizona is where they're at right now. That they should be doing much. I agree with Tony La Russa. You know, they should be much better than they are. That's a team that needs to really look at itself and see where it's at, because how can you be 13 and a half games out of first place with the talent pool that you have and still have in your minor leagues? They made some bad deals in the off season, but one or two bad deals can't really explain this. As far as the Padres, they're still a team in flux. They have a lot of really good pieces. I'd say of all the teams in the National League, the Padres are probably the number one or two team that's been active in the international scouting and drafting and signing of players. You're going to see San Diego in the next two or three years with some really good Latin American players coming up that no one's ever heard of. So, yeah, the National League West has a lot of dynamic aspects, but you're absolutely right. They can't compare to the Central or the East right now. And I was looking tonight and tomorrow at the games scheduled. And I'm going to say this, and this is kind of a bold thing to say that somebody should probably not say, but we're seeing three pitchers come up in the last month or so in the National League that I think we're going to see for the next 15 years in the National League. Lucas Giolotto for Washington started tonight. Unfortunately, there was a rain delay. He was pitching really well in his first start. He is going to be a dominant pitcher in the National League. Julio Urias, we've talked about before, he was starting tonight for the Dodgers. He is going to be an absolutely dominant pitcher, a kind of Kershaw type of pitcher in the National League. And tomorrow, Jameson Taillon for Pittsburgh starts, 24 years old, another guy who's begun his National League career as a starter. Those three pitchers are going to be dominant pitchers in the National League, and they all came up roughly the same time, same year. Very exciting in the National League to see that. And I love the fact that each one of them came up in a different division, you know, and that adds a little spice to every division going forward. It's going to be great fun to see the Nationals, I think, look awesome, look tremendous going forward. And this isn't even they have some other minor league assets that we're going to be seeing over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I was listening to the broadcast last night, and they mentioned that Trey Turner was testing himself out in the center field, and that was the same night that Denard's Ben Revere had like a 3-for-3 night or something like with two doubles. So that, I guess I'm transitioning into something where, like, I noticed the outfield is becoming this kind of experimental grounds where if you need some to play somebody who doesn't have a position, you throw them out in the outfield. And I don't know, the outfield is not, I don't think it's as easy as maybe major league teams think of it. You know, I heard the Mets talking about maybe putting Jose Reyes in the outfield, and we saw Schwarber go in the outfield, and he was wound up getting hurt. I don't know. Do you feel that maybe the outfield is becoming diminished in terms of the defensive, you know, liability somewhat in the outfield?
You know, I don't. What I feel is happening is that there's this kind of utility kind of aspect that's come out in baseball, and you have to credit the Tampa Bay Rays over the last 4 or 5 years, an organization who understood that you need to be flexible with players, and that you can actually have a really good player who's a really good second baseman, and if it turns out that you've either made trades or you have people in your farm system coming up who are going to take second base, that rather than do the traditional baseball thing, which is that, oh, I have 2 second basemen, I'll trade one, you know, you move players to other positions. And Tampa Bay kind of led that revolution 4 or 5 years ago, and they've been doing it quietly for the last several years. And, I mean, you have to say that that the Cubs kind of picked that up. And you look at Chris Bryant, you look at a number of other players on the Cubs, where you have this kind of versatility that's not just you do it because you have to do it, you do it because you want to do it. That Chris Bryant plays left field, he plays right field, he's played center field, he plays third base. And it's the kind of thing where you're kind of blurring the lines as they used to be, because you want the most athletic, best baseball player on your team. And if you're the best third baseman, if you're a really good third baseman, how can you not be a good left fielder? Although, I see, I agree with you that these kinds of talent sets are not easily you can't trade them off. Just because you're a good shortstop does not mean you're going to be a good center fielder, and vice versa. I agree with that. But if an organization is actively working toward creating that the way Tampa did the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, then that becomes kind of part of the mindset of the minor leagues and the players coming up. They realize that, you know, I'm playing third base, I could play some first base too, and that helps the team. Joe Maddon is, you know, from being the manager in Tampa to being the manager in Chicago, a disciple of that. And he's not doing it just to do it. He's doing it to create flexibility. And look who Chicago has lost. The Cubs have lost. They lost, you know, Schwarber and Solar and you know, two one starting outfielder, one left fielder catcher, and they brought up two guys from the minor leagues, a catcher and an outfielder, who are going crazy and doing really well. And he's still moving pieces around his defense, and I think that's really smart. So, in one way, no. I think the outfield isn't losing a step in terms of these kinds of moves. I think teams are becoming more flexible and understanding that you need these super utility guys, the kind of Ben Zobrist model that seemed like, oh, that's just about Ben Zobrist. No, that's not about Ben Zobrist. That's about creating a situation where you can start mixing and matching players to make games work in different series, in different situations. And I think it's awesome. I think it's great.
Rick, if you have anything, I was going to say one more thing, but to touch on this point here.
Well, I think the one thing I take a look at, and Richard, me and AC talked about this last week, one of the surprise teams have been the Marlins this season, and how dominant they've been, particularly how dominant Jose Fernandez has been. Mm. Excellent for the Marlins. They're somehow still in this race, even with a down year by Stanton. But we saw in the past with Steven Strasburg in his innings, we saw Matt Harvey last year. We're at a point now with Fernandez where he's near 100 innings. He's been absolutely on fire so far, and we all know he's got that innings limit. I always wonder, Richard, is going to be that one team that tells Scott Boras, look, the guy's pitching, because most people don't think Jose Fernandez is going to sign an extension with the Marlins. I wonder what's going to happen if Miami stays in this race, whether it's the East or whether it's a wild card spot. Are they really going to shut this guy down?
That's a good question. We've seen that happen before. You know, we've seen teams shut players down, and you know, it hasn't worked out for them to do that. That's a good question. It'll be interesting to see. There's a point at which, for somebody like Fernandez, where they have to break through that final barrier. You know, you have to move on beyond that kind of thing where you're handled with kid gloves and kind of ease through things, because especially a team like the Marlins, who are fairly one-dimensional, great lineup, great, you know, 9-8 players on the field, you know, a couple of good starting pitchers, a couple of league average starting pitchers, a couple of not so good starting pitchers. There's a point at which Fernandez has to kind of grab the role that's there in front of him, the way Kershaw has, the way Arrieta has, the way Wainwright did for St. Louis, and a number of other pitchers. And your question's good because, you know, is he capable of doing that? And B, is he going to be capable of doing that if you don't ask him to do it? You know, there's a point at which you have to see if he can do it. He is, for my money, he's one of the top three or four pitchers, not only in the National League, but in baseball. And, you know, how much rope do you give him? And in giving him that rope, how much do you put him in jeopardy in terms of, you know, physically and getting worn down? It's going to be an interesting thing to see. I think once the Marlins passed the Mets, that was a significant moment in the National League this year. Once the Marlins moved into second place, that was like one of these sea change moments. And, you know, they went into second place, they lost second place, and now they're back in second place. That's really a moment this year. And can they sustain it? They certainly have the on-field offense and defense to do it. It's going to be a fascinating thing to see, but I'm kind of in favor of challenging somebody like Fernandez. You know, if you're the guy, be the guy. And in terms of holding back and not playing him, what do you get? It's like the Strasburg thing, you know, with the Nationals. At what point do you play these guys? At what point do they get the chance to lead the charge in the postseason? And you guys know as well as I do that you can think, and the Nationals are the poster team for this. You can think, well, we're good. We're going to be good for the next couple of years. We'll be there next year. Well, how many next years have the Nationals had? And it looks like they have another next year. And how many times can you pass that moment, you know, and say, you know, we're not going to do this. I'm seeing that the Marlins are going to push it. I also agree with you that Fernandez is going to probably be with the Dodgers or with, you know, St. Louis or some other team going forward. That's just the way the Marlins play things. But we'll see. But I'm for pushing Fernandez all the way.
Yeah, that was a good topic there. Yeah, it's a delicate balance for these teams. You want to see what. Interesting kind of test case there with Fernandez. Richard, always a great time when you call in. I thought we covered a lot of topics. Maybe if next time you come in, the Giants will be 30 games over 500, right?
And I'll be just as cautious. You're right. But, you know, I have to say about the Giants, I'm not cautious in that I'm afraid they're going to lose. I'm cautious because I know the team really well. They're not deep. And the Dodgers are a wildly talented team. And I want the Giants to be what the Cubs are and what the Dodgers are. They're a championship team. They're a team with incredible revenue and money, absolutely amazing amounts of money. I want them to be a championship team from top to bottom and in the farm system, and they aren't that yet. And I don't know why they aren't that. I imagine the ownership group likes their profits at the end of each year, and I don't begrudge them that. They're a business. But I want to see the Giants step up into that next kind of level that I've seen the Nationals, the Cubs, the Cardinals step up to, and they're capable of doing that. So it's not so much a fear of them losing. It's that I want them to be the championship team that they have been. And we'll see going forward, you know, kind of what they do and which direction they go.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be players at the end of the year. Everybody check out the Giants Cove. That's Richard's blog that covers the San Francisco Giants, among other things. Thanks a lot, Richard. I'll definitely be reaching out to you in the future.
AC, Ricky, great to talk to you. You know, go Nationals. I think it's going to be a great year for them.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
Okay, that was Richard Dyer of the Giants Cove. Rick, you still there? I know that was a great spot for him. He always does a good job, and I thought that was a lot of fun. Just quickly, the Met game and the National game has started. It's, what is it, the top of the fifth, and looks like it's Blevins and Petit.
And the important thing from this game so far, Terry Collins played matchups in the fourth. He puts Eric Cadell in, walks Dan Spinoza, and then goes to Blevins right away, so that's a little bit strange. And Curtis Granderson is out of this game. He's 100 yards in right, so that's another injury issue for the Mets now, with Granderson at least out for the night.
You know, just to not to get – yeah, you're right, I saw that with Diaz. I don't know, something's wrong with his hand, I think. Just not to get off topic, but I noticed, you know, with a team like the Mets, the fact that they have no speed, you know, pretty much no speed. I mean, last night – the Nationals had 6 stolen bases, and the Mets have a team 15 stolen bases. So I'm just, you know, if you put that into perspective, they really don't have much speed. Now, a game like this, Brandon Nimmo gets on first base. He can steal second, and Travis d'Arnaud hits him in as a single, and it's 1-1. But the Mets, I don't know, they don't have any speed. So what I'm getting at is that speed can really help you maybe squeak out a couple of wins, and it's definitely a nice X factor for your team.
Well, I think in last night's game, we saw one thing I've been pointing out since March when you look at these two teams. You can run on Travis d'Arnaud. Travis d'Arnaud, even though I know his throwing arm has been a little bit better since coming back, teams are 22-27 stealing bases on d'Arnaud this year coming into tonight. Plus Noah Syndergaard, their teams are 28-31. The second most stolen bases behind Syndergaard is 14, with Jake Arrieta, I believe, is thinking of 14 stolen bases. That's really a factor Syndergaard's going to have to get better on. And maybe he just wasn't focusing on that last night because he was trying to work at the bone spur or whatever that is, trying to overthrow, something like that. That would be a little bit of a concern, at least going in, that he's not focusing on that. We saw that why he messed up against the Giants. But you're right. The Mets don't have a lot of speed. They didn't have a lot of speed last year, and they still got to the World Series. But now with the injuries they have, the lack of speed, I think, shows up. And who knows? Maybe they'll get the spark from the guy we talked about last week since they brought back Jose Reyes.
Yeah. Now, maybe we could touch on this a little bit. I feel bad. I don't want this to be so much Mets, but it just so happens that they were in the news a lot this past 2 weeks, the fact that they're two-star pitchers having bone spurs. And this thing with Jose Reyes, a lot of people in New York were actually upset with this type of – I mean, there was one – local councilwoman here, I forget exactly what her position is in the New York City government, Maria Verita, I forgot her name. I don't want to like botch this whole thing. But she was saying that, you know, Major League Baseball doesn't have any sympathy for women with the fact that the Mets are bringing back Jose Reyes. Do you think this is maybe, I know, I understand he did something wrong. He's trying to make him, but give the guy a second chance, I would think, right?
I think it's definitely deserves a second chance. There's no question about it. I just wondered the second chance with this or with his old organization. Probably what was a little surprising.
Well, I think it's timing too. You know, the Mets are desperate. This is definitely a desperate move,
yeah.
I think, by the Mets, right? I mean, it screams desperation. And Jose Reyes, he lives in New York. He lives in Long Island. So for him, this is actually going to be a lot of fun. But I just hope that he produces, because right now the Mets aren't really owed him much money, so they can cut bait like rather quickly if they want.
Yeah, so it's a low-risk deal for them. He's got the minor league deal. We'll see what he does when he comes up, probably be next week or so.
Now, we only have 5 minutes, but a couple of teams that have, I guess, kind of like one's going up and one's going down. One's going up is your Houston Astros, who have been very exciting these last. And then the one going down, I think Seattle. As you see, there's a little bit of a shakeup going on with their starting rotation. But they'll hang in there. They're about, 500. But they've kind of lost some swagger there with dropping below the Astros with the slack.
Seattle had some good wins over against the Cardinals over the weekend. Now Adam Lind had a walk-off of Rosenthal, and Rosenthal is no longer the closer with the Cardinals. So that's something to keep an eye on with that bullpen. The Mariners are in action tonight against Pittsburgh. Scoreless in the third. Mariners have runners in the corners, so nobody out. Maybe they'll get a run here against the Pirates. The Astros, though, my team, starting to come around. Carlos Correa, 3-run homer tonight in the first inning. They're beating up on the Angels, which is something that they should be doing. They had a rough time last night. Actually, they won last night, so give them credit for that. Again, they're playing better. Fister's giving them good pitching. They have Feldman tonight. I mean, now all of a sudden we turn the Astros from saying that they're done to being definitely being a buyer at the deadline, whether it's for, I don't think they'll get back in the race because Texas is that good. But definitely they're in the mix of one of those wild cards. Boston scuffling, Toronto scuffling a little bit. They had a rough time in Colorado last night. Their bullpen issues are concerned. The Astros are definitely going to be one of those contenders for one of those wild cards again.
No, if they can keep themselves in this type of light up until the All-Star break, if they can get themselves to, you know, maybe 7 games over 500, give them a little bit of wiggle room, and I can't imagine them, you know, really tanking it then. I mean, at that point, their confidence is back. They're starting pitching, like you were touching on, Fister has been great. McCullers is coming around. He's only been there for a short time. You know, it's funny. You're having a really good run right now, even with Dallas Keuchel not really up to snuff.
And that's the scary thing for the rest of the league is you got to think Keuchel's eventually going to figure something out.
Yeah, exactly. Just a side note, it's pretty funny. I didn't realize that Rosenthal was knocked off the closer role because right now I only have two closers on my fantasy team. One of them was Rosenthal, and the other one was Alex Colome of the Tampa Bay. He's out in the DL too, but he should be coming back. But still, bicep tendonitis doesn't sound good.
We got to go out and get the guy from St. Louis. I won't try his first name, but his last name is O. He's supposedly really good from Korea.
No, I would, but I'm in a 20-team league, and I'm sure somebody already scooped him up.
True.
I'm lucky. Yeah. Let's see. Not much going on this week in terms of games. You know, I looked at the games. The Cubs and Reds knotted up 13th inning. But in terms of rivalries, nothing really much to get excited except for the Cardinals and the Royals. Looks like the Cardinals are winning that game. I saw Lorenzo Cain came up lame. I don't know what happened with him. Hamstring injury.
Another big injury as well. Zach Greinke left after 2 innings tonight against the Phillies.
Really?
So this gets worse for Arizona this year.
And just so everybody's comfortable right now, Mike Socia's job is not in jeopardy.
I wouldn't think so. I think he's got one of those things where, like, he goes out on his own terms, I would think. But you never know. Torrey didn't get that, but you never know.
Right? He's been there for how long? 17 years. I think he's been there since the earthquake. Remember that's here. Was he even involved in that? Yeah. The 89 earthquake?
Was he? I'll look into that one.
No. I mean, I'm just saying was he the manager? I know he wasn't the A's or the Giants manager. I'm just saying, was he the manager at that time? He's like he's been there forever. See how many years ago he got.
He's first,
like 1999.
Yeah, 2000. So yeah.
Yeah. So do you see anything before we clock out? Do you see anything coming up next week?
Well, of course, we got
the
big
weekend
series. It looks like Cubs-Mets this weekend. I think it's supposed to be Syndergaard and Arrieta Saturday night on Fox. So that would be a lot of fun if that ends up being the matchup. You got Baltimore's in Seattle. What else we got here on the list? Cool thing going on, White Sox Astros, but a cool thing going on Sunday night. I believe this game is on ESPN. Braves and Marlins in Fort Bragg. So, one of those cool things to honor the military, play a baseball game over a fort. Cool thing that the troops will get to see a baseball game. So that'll be a lot of fun. Also, when we come back next week, we have All-Star Selection. I believe the selection show is Tuesday night at 7 o'clock next week.
Okay, so we'll have to get on that next week. Jump on that.
So if you haven't voted yet, I think you have to vote by Thursday night.
Wow, All-Star break already coming up. Crazy. All right, cool. That Fort Bragg thing, is that how many people can fit in? That can't be much of a stadium, right?
I don't think you can fit that many people in there, but we'll take a look here real quick. By the way, also, 4th of July, you have Texas and Boston. So that's another good one. You have Seattle and Houston, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Marlins, Mets, Orioles, Dodgers. You got a lot. Tigers, and first off, can the Tigers beat the Indians? What are they, 0-10 against Cleveland here, 0-9?
Let me see. Hold on.
And that Fort Bragg thing, you could fit 12,500 people in the park.
12,000. So they're going to have – that's really funny. All right, that one aspect is I kind of was thinking about, like, when they show it on TV, how the difference in the sound. It's going to be almost like watching the College World Series.
Which has been cool, by the way, too. Is it Arizona, Coastal Carolina?
Yeah, so I caught a little bit of that. There's that one guy I noticed. So he's like as short as Altuve. He kind of plays for Coastal Carolina.
Altuve's having
a beard.
You could put Altuve in the MVP race this year.
Yeah, he's carrying that offense.
But when you have the 1-2-3 of Altuve, Springer, and Correa, that's as good of a 1-2-3 as anybody in the league. Altuve's hitting .348, 13 homers, 45 ribbies, and a .425 on base. Wow.
You throw some Colby Rasmus in there, too.
Yeah, that's true.
All right,
Rick.
Oh.
All right.
Sorry about that. Now, so what you got going this Thursday? Are you going to do the podcast?
We're hoping to. I mean, cool series, unique series coming up this weekend. Yankees are in San Diego to take on the Padres. So rarely get the Yankees at Petco, but hopefully we'll talk some Padres, talk some Will Myers, Sandy Rowney, all that fun stuff. And then the Yankees are in Chicago to play the White Sox. Beginning next week. So they'll play the White Sox and Indians before the break. We'll have some fun with that. I'll be at the game tomorrow night. I was at Nick Martinez and Tanaka. They won Saturday night when I was there, 2-1. So maybe they'll win tomorrow and get out and finally beat Texas, which doesn't look likely. Texas is over 50 wins already. But as with that, we'll go to District on Deck. We'll have more on G Leo's debut, and we'll just have some fun with that tomorrow. Futures game, Ronaldo Lopez got the Futures game. He's been excellent. He could have got the call up if he hadn't pitched Saturday, but he got called AAA, so he's on the way too. So we'll talk more about that on District on Deck, and again, we'll talk Yankees-Padres next week. Rematch the 98 World Series.
Do you think they'll have a video tribute to Chase Headley?
You know, the Rockies hadn't done one for too long.
They didn't do it for Tulo?
I saw that MLB Now today. They did not do a tribute for Tulowitzki last night.
Wow.
I know. I mean, I would think they would have. I mean, if John Neese gets a tribute and Troy Tulowitzki doesn't get one, we have issues with tribute. Nobody should get a tribute anymore.
That's funny. Exactly.
The John Neese.
Oh, man. All right, but... Yeah, we'll talk about that, and we'll touch on that next week. All right, thanks a lot, Rick. Have a good weekend, and enjoy the 4th of July weekend.
Do I see you guys? Happy 4th out there. We're back Tuesday, last show of the first half, and we'll talk all-star stuff and a whole lot more.
All right, cool. Take it easy, folks.